Chapter 156. Wherein Nicholas and his sister forfeit the good opinion of all worldly and prudent people. On the next morning after Brooker's disclosure had been made, Nicholas returned home. The meeting between him and those whom he had left there was not without strong emotion on both sides, for they had been informed by his letters of what had occurred. And, besides that his griefs were theirs, they mourned with him the death of one whose forlorn and helpless state at first established a claim upon their compassion, and whose truth of heart and grateful earnest nature had, every day, endeared him to them more and more. "I am sure," said Mrs. Nickleby, wiping her eyes and sobbing bitterly, "I have lost the best, the most zealous, and most attentive creature that has ever been a companion to me in my life, putting you, my dear Nicholas, and Kate, and your poor papa, and that well-behaved nurse who ran away with the linen and the 12 small forks, out of the question, of course. Of all the tractable, equal-tempered, attached, and faithful beings that ever lived, I believe he was the most so. To look round upon the garden, now, that he took so much pride in, or to go into his room, and see it filled with so many of those little contrivances for our comfort, that he was so fond of making, and made so well, and so little thought he would leave unfinished, I can't bear it, I cannot really. Ah! This is a great trial to me, a great trial. It will be comfort to you, my dear Nicholas, to the end of your life, to recollect how kind and good you always were to him. So it will be to me, to think what excellent terms we were always upon, and how fond he always was of me, poor fellow. It was very natural you should have been attached to him, my dear, very, and of course you were, and are very much cut up by this. I am sure it's only necessary to look at you, and see how changed you are, to see that. But nobody knows what my feelings are, nobody can, it's quite impossible. While Mrs. Nickleby, with the utmost sincerity, gave vent to her sorrows after her own peculiar fashion of considering herself foremost, she was not the only one who indulged such feelings. Kate, although well accustomed to forget herself when others were to be considered, could not repress her grief. Madeline was scarcely less moved than she, and poor, hearty, honest little Miss La Creevy, who had come upon one of her visits while Nicholas was away, and had done nothing since the sad news arrived but console and cheer them all, no sooner beheld him coming in at the door than she sat herself down upon the stairs, and bursting into a flood of tears, refused for a long time to be comforted. "It hurts me so," cried the poor body, "to see him come back alone. I can't help thinking what he must have suffered himself. I wouldn't mind so much if he gave way a little more, but he bears it so manfully." "Why, so I should," said Nicholas, "should I not?" "Yes, replied the little woman, "and bless you for a good creature, but this does seem at first to a simple soul like me. I know it's wrong to say so, and I shall be sorry for it presently. This does seem such a poor reward for all you have done." Said Nicholas gently, "what better reward could I have than the knowledge that his last days were peaceful and happy, and the recollection that I was his constant companion, and was not prevented, as I might have been by a hundred circumstances, from being beside him?" Sobbed Miss La Creevy. "It's very true, and I'm an ungrateful, impious, wicked little fool, I know." With that, the good soul fell to crying afresh, and, endeavoring to recover herself, tried to laugh. The laugh and the cry, meeting each other thus abruptly, had a struggle for the mastery. The result was that it was a drawn battle, and Miss La Creevy went into hysterics. Waiting until they were all tolerably quiet and composed again, Nicholas, who stood in need of some rest after his long journey, retired to his own room, and throwing himself, dressed as he was, upon the bed, fell into a sound sleep. When he awoke, he found Kate sitting by his bedside, who who, seeing that he had opened his eyes, stooped down to kiss him. I came to tell you how glad I am to see you home again. Apostrophe, but I can't tell you how glad I am to see you, Kate. Apostrophe, we have been wearying so for your return. Apostrophe, said Kate, Mama and I, and made line. Apostrophe, you said in your last letter that she was quite well. Apostrophe, said Nicholas, rather hastily, and coloring as he spoke. Has nothing been said, since I have been away, about any future arrangements that the brothers have in contemplation for her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, not a word, apostrophe, replied Kate. I can't think of parting from her without sorrow, and surely, Nicholas, you don't wish it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Nicholas colored again, and, sitting down beside his sister on the little couch near the window, said, No, Kate, no, I do not. I might strive to disguise my real feelings from anybody but you. But I will tell you that briefly and plainly, Kate, that I love her. Apostrophe, Kate's eyes brightened, and she was going to make some reply, when Nicholas laid his hand upon her arm, and went on. Nobody must know this but you. She, last of all. Apostrophe, dear Nicholas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, last of all. Never, though never is a long day. Sometimes, I try to think that the time may come when I may honestly tell her this, but it is so far off, in such distant perspective, so many years must elapse before it comes, and when it does come, if ever, I shall be so unlike what I am now, and shall have so outlived my days of youth and romance, though not, I am sure, of love for her, that even I feel how visionary all such hopes must be, and try to crush them rudely myself, and have the pain over, rather than suffer time to wither them, and keep the disappointment in store. No, Kate. Since I have been absent, I have had, in that poor fellow who is gone, perpetually before my eyes, another instance of the munificent liberality of these noble brothers. As far as in me lies, I will deserve it, and if I have wavered in my bounden duty to them before, I am now determined to discharge it rigidly, and to put further delays and temptations beyond my reach. Apostrophe, before you say another word, dear Nicholas, apostrophe, said Kate, turning pale, you must hear what I have to tell you. I came on purpose, but I had not the courage. What you say now gives me new heart. Apostrophe, she faltered, and burst into tears. There was that in her manner which prepared Nicholas for what was coming. Kate tried to speak, but her tears prevented her. Come, you foolish girl, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Why, Kate, Kate, be a woman. I think I know what you would tell me. It concerns Mr. Frank, does it not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Kate sunk her head upon his shoulder, and sobbed out yes. Apostrophe, and he has offered you his hand, perhaps, since I have been away, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Is that it? Yes. Well, well, it is not so difficult, you see, to tell me after all. He offered you his hand? Apostrophe, apostrophe, which I refused, apostrophe, said Kate. Yes, and why? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I told him, apostrophe, she said, in a trembling voice, all that I have since found you told Mama, and while I could not conceal from him, and cannot from you, that it was a pang and a great trial, I did so firmly, and begged him not to see me any more. Apostrophe, that's my own brave Kate. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas, pressing her to his breast. I knew you would. Apostrophe, he tried to alter my resolution, apostrophe, said Kate, and declared that, be my decision what it might, he would not only inform his uncles of the step he had taken, but would communicate it to you also, directly you returned. I am afraid, apostrophe, she added, her momentary composure forsaking her, I am afraid I may not have said, strongly enough, how deeply I felt such disinterested love, and how earnestly I prayed for his future happiness. If you do talk together, I should like him to know that. Apostrophe, and did you suppose, Kate, when you had made this sacrifice to what you knew was right and honorable, that I should shrink from mine? " said Nicholas tenderly. Oh no, not if your position had been the same, but it is the same, interrupted Nicholas. Madeline is not the near relation of our benefactors, but she is closely bound to them by ties as dear, and I was first interested with her history, specially because they reposed unbounded confidence in me, and believed that I was as true as steel. How base would it be of me to take advantage of the circumstances which placed her here, or of the slight service I was happily able to render her, and to seek to engage her affections, when the result must be, if I succeeded, that the brothers would be disappointed in their darling wish of establishing her as their own child, and that I must seem to hope to build my fortunes on their compassion for the young creature whom I had so meanly and unworthily entrapped. Turning her very gratitude and warmth of heart to my own purpose and account, and trading in her misfortunes. I too, whose duty, and pride, and pleasure, Kate, it is to have other claims upon me which I will never forget, and who have the means of a comfortable and happy life already, and have no right to look beyond it. I have determined to remove this weight from my mind. I doubt whether I have not done wrong, even now. And today I will, without reserve or equivocation, disclose my real reasons to Mr. Cherubel, and implore him to take immediate measures for removing this young lady to the shelter of some other roof. Today, so very soon? I have thought of this for weeks, and why should I postpone it? If the scene through which I have just passed has taught me to reflect, and has awakened me to a more anxious and careful sense of duty, why should I wait until the impression has cooled? You would not dissuade me, Kate, now would you? You may grow rich, you know, said Kate. I may grow rich. Repeated Nicholas, with a mournful smile, and I may grow old. But rich or poor, or old or young, we shall ever be the same to each other, and in that our comfort lies. What if we have but one home? It can never be a solitary one to you and me. What if we were to remain so true to these first impressions, as to form no others? It is but one more link to the strong chain that binds us together. It seems but yesterday that we were playfellows, Kate, and it will seem, but tomorrow when we are staid old people, looking back to these cares as we look back now, to those of our childish days, and recollecting with a melancholy pleasure that the time was when they could move us. Perhaps then, when we are quaint old folks and talk of the times when our step was lighter and our hair not gray, we may be even thankful for the trials that so endeared us to each other and turned our lives into that current down which we shall have glided so peacefully and calmly. And having caught some inkling of our story, the young people about us, as young as you and I are now, Kate, may come to us for sympathy, and pour distresses which hope and inexperience could scarcely feel enough for, into the compassionate ears of the old bachelor brother and his maiden sister. Kate smiled through her tears as Nicholas drew this picture, but they were not tears of sorrow, although they continued to fall when he had ceased to speak. Am I not right, Kate? He said, after a short silence. Quite, quite, dear brother, and I cannot tell you how happy I am that I have acted as you would have had me. You don't regret? Said Kate timidly, tracing some pattern upon the ground with her little foot. I don't regret having done what was honorable and right, of course. But I do regret that this should have ever happened. At least sometimes I regret it, and sometimes I don't know what I say. I am but a weak girl, Nicholas, and it has agitated me very much. It is no vaunt to affirm that, if Nicholas had had £10,000 at the minute, he would, in his generous affection for the owner of the blushing cheek and downcast eye, have bestowed its utmost farthing, in perfect forgetfulness of himself, to secure her happiness. But all he could do was to comfort and console her by kind words, and words they were of such love and kindness, and cheerful encouragement, that poor Kate threw her arms about his neck, and declared she would weep no more. What man, apostrophe thought Nicholas proudly, while on his way, soon afterwards, to the brother's house, would not be sufficiently rewarded for any sacrifice of fortune by the possession of such a heart as Kate's, which, but that hearts weigh light, and gold and silver heavy, is beyond all praise. Frank has money, and wants no more. Where would it buy him such a treasure as Kate? And yet, in unequal marriages, the rich party is always supposed to make a great sacrifice, and the other to get a good bargain. But I am thinking like a lover, or like an ass. Which I suppose, is pretty nearly the same. Apostrophe, checking thoughts so little adapted to the business on which he was bound, by such self-reproofs as this, and many others no less sturdy, he proceeded on his way, and presented himself before Tim Linkinwater. Ah! Mr. Nickleby! Apostrophe cried Tim, God bless you! How do you do? Well? Say you're quite well and never better. Do now. Apostrophe, quite, apostrophe said Nicholas, shaking him by both hands. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tim, you look tired though, now I come to look at you. Hark! There he is, do you hear him? That was Dick, the blackbird. He hasn't been himself since you've been gone. He'd never get on without you now. He takes as naturally to you as he does to me. Apostrophe, Dick is a far less sagacious fellow than I supposed him, if he thinks I am half so well worthy of his notice as you, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Why, I'll tell you what, sir, apostrophe said Tim, standing in his favorite attitude and pointing to the cage with the feather of his pen, it's a very extraordinary thing about that bird, that the only people he ever takes the smallest notice of, are Mr. Charles, and Mr. Ned, and you, and me. Apostrophe, here, Tim stopped and glanced anxiously at Nicholas. Then unexpectedly catching his eye repeated, and you and me, sir, and you and me, apostrophe and then he glanced at Nicholas again, and, squeezing his hand, said, I am a bad one at putting off anything I am interested in. I didn't mean to ask you, but I should like to hear a few particulars about that poor boy. Did he mention Cheerable Brothers at all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Nicholas, many and many a time. Apostrophe, that was right of him, apostrophe returned Tim, wiping his eyes, that was very right of him. Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.